This is Audible.
Portions of this audio drama contain mature language and themes. Listener discretion is advised. Audible Originals presents The Diary of a Hounslow Girl. Written and performed by Ambreen Razia. Directed by Sophie Monoram.
All over Facebook saying she's gonna mash me up. She keeps spelling words wrong, which is making me feel better. And Leonie knows not to say too much in case I tell everyone about her and Mr. Coleman. I mean, it's not like I plan to stay friends with them forever. I know it's a bit of a dickhead thing to say here, but Tash and Leonie don't ever plan on leaving this place. Trust me, they're just not about that life. If I was to give Tash a Vogue magazine, I guarantee you the first thing she would do is use it for Roach. And if I was to give Leonie the finest bottle of champagne, she would shout out something like, trust me, I've had willies bigger than this bottle, fam. Anyway, my mum was bare happy when I stopped hanging around with Tash and Leonie. Because she says, yeah, that it's better to be alone than in bad company. And her hope was that I'd become best friends with Auntie Nusrat's daughter, Yasmin, who's secretly just as bad but pretends to be so good. Trust me, just because Yasmin can recite the whole Quran and speak fluent Urdu, it don't make her an angel. I mean, I've done some bad stuff, but at least I don't pretend to be something I'm not. I would never spark up a zoo before going into the mosque like she does. Or take my hijab off when I saw a group of boys. Yeah, I might have stolen a couple of things from Superdrug during the riots and dumb shit like that, but at least I've done it as myself. You know when you do that thing when you're alone at school? And you pretend that you're texting bare people? Well, really, I was just going through my old pictures of me, Tash and Leonie. I had a whole album from when we went down to Brighton together. Because them two just wanted to go cinema that day, but I thought it would be sick if we'd done something different, innit? So we all packed up our shit and we got on the train down there. And we sat by the sea all day sunbathing in our Primani bikinis. We must have posted 100 selfies that day. Leonie had her tongue out in most of them, showing off her new black and gold tongue bar, and Tash had just gotten her new nail extensions refilled, so always had her two middle fingers up in every picture. I remember asking Tash what she liked most about being by the sea. And halfway through taking a toke of her spliff, she said, I don't know, cuz. Because it's free. And when I asked Leonie, she said, I don't know, babe. But if you think about it, thousands of people have lived without love. But not one person has lived without water. That's mad, isn't it? Leonie always surprised me with her views on the world, which is why I think I loved her the most. But they both said to me that I wouldn't give a shit about the ocean as much if I wasn't in love, but they're wrong. I loved the sea before, and I think it's because I've stood in front of so many things that make me feel small, but never free. My sister chalked it up to the fact that I'm a Cancerian and I like the colour blue. Anyway, the point I was trying to make is that I didn't want to go home that day. And our little trip to Brighton made me realise there's more to life than Scatty Hounslow. I've got to go. Alright. What else do I need? Oh, I can't fit any more in these bags! Alright, look. I need to hurry up and say what I need to say because I don't have much time. Alright. So, usually there are 9 parts to a Pakistani wedding. Look, don't worry, I'm not going to go through all of them. My sister asked me if I thought she should go ahead and celebrate all 9. I was like, Aisha, are you dumb? The only thing you're doing is giving him 9 chances to leave you, and I ain't trying to offend you or anything, but trust me, he don't love you that much. I wasn't being rude, yeah, but if men have walked out on Jennifer Aniston and Marilyn Monroe, then wallahi, the chances of him leaving her are proper high, especially if you're going to give him 9 chances. So last week we kicked off with the henna, which is usually the first part to this long event. Bride ain't allowed to show her face to no one on this day. Personally, I think it's in case someone recognises her, if you get me. Only part of my sister I got to see that day were her hands. I would see them slip out from under her veil, covered in henna which had been prepared the night before, but you wouldn't think so. It was already starting to fade, and some stupid, suspicious people say, yeah, that the darker the mendy on the day of your wedding, the longer you'll stay with your husband, and hers was already turning into this nasty burnt orange colour. I swear down, she was so shook when she woke up that day. And she was getting handed these thick white and brown envelopes. No one else clocked it, but she was giving them all a slight shake to see who had been most generous. I couldn't work out where she was stashing them all. I imagine she'd sewn a kangaroo-type pouch on the inside of her knickers or something. She was loving all the attention. All the fuss that was being made over her and her new man. Ugh. And what pissed me off was that she'd done it so well. Like she got a master's in being some top Pakistani bride. And she would do this thing, yeah, where she would, like, mimic those old 1920s Bollywood actresses by occasionally looking up and giggling a bit and then looking down, pretending like she remembered everyone there by saying, "Thank you so much for coming. It's been too long." My mum was stood behind her chair, not concentrating on anyone but me, holding her stomach every time she saw me checking my phone or moving closer and closer to the door. I just wanted to let me tell the story. And I can't have any interruptions from her. I mean, I'm actually starting to scare myself with the thoughts I'm having. Like, I don't know, like maybe tying her up and like putting a bag over her head.
No, I'm joking.
Okay. This camera. Okay, I place it here. Put it up. Okay, that's a good position. Record. So, just in case I ain't here when you get back, Mum, I won't miss out on any important details, so you won't be shortchanged. This is fully it. The thing is, it's always been my dream to start fresh. I want to go travelling. I want to visit the Far East, and I want to see the Great Wall of China, see what all the fuss is about. I want to meditate on top of a mountain and eat noodles with the locals. And after I learn martial arts, I want to visit the Forbidden City, because I heard it's all off limits and that. Then, I'm going to make my way down to South Africa and pay my respects to Mandela. Then, I'm going to move over to Egypt and see the pyramids. And for the final part of the trip, I'm going to make my way over to America, drive down Route 66 and finish off at the Grand Canyon. Look, you need to know that I'm different to everyone else around here. My dreams and aspirations go beyond anything anyone could ever imagine. I mean, the only thing I have in common with Hounslow is that I was born to leave it one day. Stop recording. You know when someone says one thing but they're always thinking another? That's her. That's my mum. She's about as fun as Andy Murray. And when I ask my sister about why she's so complicated, she says that all humans are complicated. But as well as being complicated, mum's just spent her whole life trying to look complicated because she's been brought up to think that that's an attractive trait to have as a woman. And when she thinks we don't get all the suffering she's going through, she'll hit us with, "You will only realise when you become a mother." Right. Okay. Back on track. I suppose I should start right from the beginning, yeah? Okay. So, I was the second daughter, which meant I had to be better than the first. High ambitions, lighter, slimmer, and quieter, which I ain't. When my sister was born, she had a full head of curly hair with big brown eyes and my mum's fat friend, Auntie Nusra, glaring over her with her bright yellow teeth. This one will not let you down. The fair ones never let you down. She had rosy cheeks with the longest lashes you'd ever seen. Mum said she looked like a beautiful porcelain dolly. I was a strange-looking baby. Mum said I looked like I'd seen a ghost when I was delivered. Static hair, cross-eyed and a turned-up nose. Auntie Nusra glared over me too, like not with big doughy eyes, but with a look that probably made my mum want to shove me back in. Hay toba bismillah. Give her a bath with 1 gram of turmeric and half a glass of milk. Toba, toba, toba. You know, the dark ones always disappoint in the end. Growing up, my sister would always try and get my eyebrows threaded or stick blue contact lenses in my eyes. At my age, she was just normal, innit? Like, she'd done everything properly. Mum says that even though I was the one wearing the hijab, I was always the wild card, whatever that means. But sometimes, I imagine I was, like, swapped at the last minute. And my real mum was like a wicked musician who couldn't afford to keep me because she had to rush off on tour. How sick would that be? My mum would always kill it. She'd never let me go to any parties. Oh, my days. Oh, my days. So a few months ago, Sean Ayres. Sean Ayres, bruv. One of the boys from our school was having a wicked house party. Qasem said he'd hired out a DJ and everything. This was going to be the party of the year. And just as I was about to leave the house, my mum stopped me and said, Hey, tum kahan ja rahi ho? Where do you think you're going in that bright top? It's a birds and bees party, mum. Huh? A birds and bees party? We have to go dressed as either a bird or a bee. Well, why can't you wear your black and yellow shalwar kameez? This party better not be in Brixton with all the blacks. I don't know, Mum. I just accepted the event on Facebook, innit? Hey, you're on Facebook? Your Auntie Nusra told me that her niece went on Facebook. She met a boy and ran off with him, and now they're living in a council house in Hackbridge. One of those small bedroom flats with no double glazing and electric cookers. She has a baby on the way with an English boy. Hi, 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 toba, 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 Allah ram kare. Upar jao, go upstairs and put a shawl on, please, and take those wings off. You want me to take the wings off and put a shawl on? I'm going to look homeless. And I've already posted a selfie of myself on Facebook, so people think I'm on my way. Mum, please. Tum Musliman ho? You are a Muslim girl. Remember, Shahida, you may be British, but you are not English. Mum, please let me go tonight. Everyone from school's got... Just allow it, Mum, please. Oh, I spent £60 on them silver wings and another £20 on that yellow top. My mum doesn't get it. She grew up in Pakistan, didn't get invited to any parties. Closest she ever got to a party was her own wedding. And even on that day, she looked proper moody. The earliest memory I have of my mum was seeing her crouched down on top of a prayer mat. And she was, like, muttering the words of some prayer and crying and trying to finish off her namaz with whatever breath she could find. It's like she was bearing her soul to God and he was just straight up blanking her. Me and my sister were both watching through the crack in the door, too scared to go inside. And then she walked out and she hugged us and said, It's just us now. It's just us girls. That's why sometimes I don't listen when I go to my classes at the masjid. Because half the time, I don't think he's fucking listening. And if that's the case, what's the point of fully practicing? My mum always said to me that by this age, I should be able to cook at least one Indian dish. A lot of the time, she compares me to our relatives' daughters who are able to juggle 3 chapatis on their head while revising for their exams. I hear Auntie Nusrat's daughter, Yasmin, knows how to make 3 Indian desserts. All from scratch. What she didn't know was that me and Yasmin would meet up nearly every Wednesday after school and we'd blaze a little zoop behind the station. And she told me the only reason she learned how to make those desserts was because they're the best when you got the munchies, innit? What, rasmalai and gulab jamun after a spliff? Oh, my days. Mum said to me that if I still can't boil rice by the age of 18, she won't bother trying to find me a husband. No mother-in-law will have you, she said. The day I mentioned Uncle Ben's microwavable rice, her eyes filled with tears. All right. Round 2. Here we go. Record. I can't stay here. I think I might die. Or worse, I'll be alive, but I'll be alive in Hounslow. A And the thought of walking down Hounslow High Street one more time will definitely send me into some long-term depression, Mum. With the sound of the shutters opening outside the same shops that sell the same things, with the same people talking about the same shit. And actually walking back to the house, I was thinking that it might be easier if me and Aisha both left you on the same day. Then you can deal with all the grief at once rather than spend your whole life wondering when I'm going to leave you, because I know you know it's coming, even though you don't know when. But to be fair, should I really have to worry about all that? You don't make any sense to me. Because you're the one who always says nothing should hold us back. But actually, it's you who's always in the way of everything. How do I turn this off? I'm waffling. I'm wasting time which I haven't got. And I need to keep an eye on the time. Because I reckon I've got about 35 minutes before my mum and the rest come to the door. And I don't know how many of them are coming. But if I... Alright, if I set an alarm or something... Okay, so I've got to be at the airport 2 hours ahead. Flight leaves at 10. Okay, stop. Facts. Stick to the fact sheet, either. Facts are important. All right, so, Tash and Leonie became friends in year 9. No, it was year 10. But Tash moved to our school from a different school, so I didn't go to our school from the beginning. But me and Leonie became best friends in year 11. Oh, fuck it, I can't do it like this. All right. Me and Leonie have always been best friends, and I know Tash secretly hated that. Leonie is one of the buffest girls in school, and I ain't just saying that because she's my bestie. She's mixed race with long brown hair up to her bum, and she looked like a video girl. Nah, she looked better than a video girl. Leonie had these bright green eyes, but you couldn't see them most of the time. Usually because she was buzzing and had used a whole bottle of mascara on her lashes, but... The thing about Leonie was that she was secretly seeing Mr. Coleman. He was our RE teacher. But Leonie said that if any of us ever grassed her up or snaked her, that Mr. Coleman would get done and that her older brother would kill him if he found out. Leonie never told us, but... Me and Tash knew her brother was part of some gang. His car was way too nice for someone who didn't work, and then when Leonie would come to school with new Chanel earrings and a brand new Michael Kors watch, bruv, we just knew what time it was. She loved Mr. Coleman. And we loved her. Which is why we never told no one. Tash was mixed race too, but not pretty. Believe me when I tell you that Tash is a big girl. She was like our bouncer, innit? Always looked out for us. She had long brown hair up to her bum too, but everyone knew it was all weave, and she had a sovereign ring on nearly every finger. Everyone knew Tash kind of fancied Leonie as well, but no one would dare say anything. At school, I was what you call like a mid-level student, innit? Like, not smart enough to make the school look good, but like, I don't know, like not dumb enough to be like a success story either. At the beginning of year 11, some next woman came in to give us all a talk on future careers and prospects. And she asked all of us what we wanted to be when we left school. Tash put her hand up and said, a stripper. Followed by Leonie, who said, a cult dealer. The woman started sweating and rubbing the back of her neck, and then she fixed her eyes on me. And what about you, young lady? What would you like to do when you leave school? Tash and Leonie started laughing at the blank expression on my face. I knew I had to come up with something quick to avoid looking like some dickhead, so in the end I panicked and told her that, I want to be a terrorist. I was expelled for a week, and I was put in isolation for 4 days after I got back because I didn't write the letter of apology. But that's when me, Tash and Leonie became close. I swear down, I had a whole album on my phone from all the times we were in isolation together. We'd spend the hours talking about Leonie and Mr. Coleman, and Tash would usually be behind Leonie, rolling her eyes, thinking what we were all thinking. We all knew what the deal was. Oh, but the belief behind Leonie's bright green eyes was mad scary sometimes. Like, she actually tricked herself into believing that he took her to see cats in the West End, and then they spent the evening drinking fine wines. Fucking fine wines. If it wasn't for this trip, I would have told everyone about Leonie and Mr. Coleman. How we gave her a separate phone that only he could contact her on. Some old Nokia brick phone. How he would pick her up from Hounslow East and take her back to his house. Now fuck it. I'll tell everyone about the time when he told her to get an abortion. She didn't leave her bedroom for 3 days. Leaving her house and my white top being covered in stains of mascara from where she'd been crying so hard, bruv, I even took her to get it done. We sat in that clinic, filling out forms and reading old Heat magazines for 3 hours before we even got seen. I read somewhere that your memory is there to tie your past up with your present and provide a framework for your future. And it's our memories that make us who we are, and I just don't think I've got enough of the ones I want to make me the person I want to be. I mean, me and my mum, we had some proper nice times together before all this shit happened. While my sister was away at uni, we used to stay up and chat. And she would tell me about her life in Pakistan and how free she felt when she was little. How she would sit outside in front of the open fire and watch my grandma work. Mum said my grandma would tell her about how she escaped from the partition. About the time they had to flee their home because people were being massacred. And that when she arrived at the station, heavily pregnant, the train that came after hers was full of dead bodies. How her husband had left her and her unborn child, and he never came back. My nan would always say that marriage is a gamble, a coin toss, and the day you get married is the day you flip it and pray that it lands on the right side. The day my mum got married and was about to leave for England, my nan whispered something to her which she says she can't forget, even if she tried. Remember your roots, and remember what the English have done. Remember that you are British, but you will never be English. Mum would tell me how Islam and her faith in Allah saved her from some scary situations. On the first day, my mum sent me to my classes at the masjid. She gave me a bag which was full of blue sugar paper, and inside was a dark black hijab. She said that it was a veil that would protect me from all evil and maybe even save me from my own thoughts at times. Oh, but it don't matter, though, because those memories are hers. Second hand, which means I can't officially own them. I mean, really, a memory is only a memory if you feel something when you think about it, innit? Because in year 11, all the lessons mesh together. Miss Middleton's, Coleman's, Uncle Abdulaziz's, my mum's, Aisha's. And I ain't gonna lie, but those memories are way too shit for me to start building my future on. Because up until a year ago, I never felt a true connection to anything. Not even a pair of trainers. And for me, this was the beginning. The day I started all over again. The memories which would become the framework for my future. The day I met Aaron. Tash and Leone used to call him a waste man because he didn't have a full-time job and he still lived with his mum, but I didn't care. I liked him from the second I saw him. So, there I was. Fresh into year 11, standing at the bus stop with Tash and Leone. We had our skirts rolled up and our new Fresh Air Maxes on. And they were both eating pick and mix, chatting about what a slag Tracy Brooker was all my days. Tracy Brooker was some next girl from our year that got pregnant by some next boy from a different school. Her Facebook and Instagram were covered in selfies of herself with her new baby bump on show at the bottom of every picture. And she would post statuses like, me, myself and I, or the hardest battles are given to the strongest soldiers, you get me? After she got pregnant, no one wanted to chat to her. Her mum had to take her out of school because people started making videos about her and posting them onto YouTube. And sometimes we would just see her around Hounslow, pushing her baby in the buggy with her head down, hoping no one would notice. Anyway, I definitely knew someone buff was coming over because Tash and Leone started like fixing their hair and pulling up their skirts as high as they could go. And then I turned around and there he was. Lent on the stop, look and listen poster. His face was only inches away from mine. I got really conscious of my breath, so I pulled away. I sat down and crossed my legs, which made my skirt ride up, revealing a little bit more of my thigh. And in his calm voice, he said, what are you girls talking about? Tash and Leone were still trying to recover, so I had to come up with something fast. I was just telling Tash and Leone about this new slimming diet I'm on. They both had tears in their eyes from laughing so hard. Yeah, because you eat whatever you want before school and then don't eat nothing else all day. Except chewing gum. You can eat chewing gum. Not bubble gum. That Hubba Bubba or Juicy Fruit or anything like that because it's high in sugar. But extra in airwaves is alright. And water. You can have water. Not tap water because of all the impurities in that. But Evian and Buxton and Highland Springs. Mineral water. You can have mineral water if you... This mad thought ran through my head that if the 117 pulled up now, I'd happily jump in front of it. He leant on the bus stop looking at me in this strange, weird way. Like, not in a way where he was trying to chirp sneer or anything, but sort of like he felt a bit sorry for me. But kind of intrigued at the same time. The moment was broken by Tash's big mouth. Say something, you fool. But I didn't have to. He took my phone out of my hand and he started tapping away. And then he handed it back to me and he said, I'll call you later. Swear down, the high street had never gone so silent. Leonie covered up her mouth and Tash screwed up her face and everything froze. I was so proud of myself that day for not shouting out something dumb like, when? I turned around to be hailed by Tash and Leonie. I imagine I'd soon wake up from this dream I was having and I'd be sat in my living room watching Auntie Nusrat chowing down on her last shortbread, but... This was real. Like, this was happening. Leonie looked deep into my phone like she wanted to climb into it. Rah! Even his number's sexy, you know. Followed by Tash, who said, bruv, you need to check if it's legit and ring it. I knew it was legit. And I knew that I didn't have to ring anyone.
My stomach was going mad that day. And I had Justin Timberlake take it from here on repeat the whole time I was walking home. You know, apart from Justin, I don't really have any other man that I listen to. Except Uncle Abdulaziz, one of the imams at the mosque. He's taught me since I was like 8 years old. He only teaches the girls. He says that girls need the most guidance and that they needed to embrace Allah on a different level. For only then will we be able to be fully obedient to the life which is laid before us. But sometimes I wouldn't listen because obedience wasn't one of the main traits he needed to be a traveller anyway. But occasionally he would say something which would make me stop texting. Something like, do not depend on love, for it is rare. And do not depend on a human, for he is departing. Rather depend on Allah, for he is supreme. And he will never leave you. Shit. Please pick up. Oh, pick up. Pick up. Where the fuck are you? Where was I? Oh, yeah. So the first time me and Aaron linked up, we went up to Leicester Square. I remember when we got up there and it was proper busy and he didn't let go of my hand once. We got back to Hounslow East and it was proper cold, so he gave me his jacket. It was too big for me, but just to have it on felt so nice. Now I know how Leonie feels when she links up with Mr. Coleman. Now Aaron would say the most beautiful things. So beautiful that even he had to sit back and reflect on what he had just said. When we got to the end of my road, I remember he looked at me for ages and he told me how pretty I looked. And then he told me to close my eyes and open my hand. He had me standing there for ages. He never really knew how long one of Aaron's moments would last. He clutched onto my hand. And I felt something in between our palms. He kissed the top of it. And he told me to open my eyes. I'd never seen something so beautiful. He must have had to go into one of the Islamic shops to get it. It was a pink and blue hairpin for my hijab and it had diamonds in it. Uncle Abdulaziz always said that the sun doesn't lose its beauty just because it's covered by the clouds, and never should you. It wasn't like buying a girl lip gloss to bring out her lips or mascara to bring out her eyes, but something deeper. Like he was telling me to embrace my hijab and to wear it proudly. He stepped in closer to me. And he lifted up my face. And then finally, he leant in for a kiss. My first ever kiss. And it was so much slower than what I had expected. Plus his beard on the side of my face felt proper weird. Now Leonie definitely underplayed it when she described her first kiss with Mr. Coleman. It was fucking mad. Madder and better than I ever imagined it to be. It was perfect. So I had just started going out of Aaron. And I swear down, I would kill myself before I let him see me helping my mum carry the box of cardamom and basmati rice home. Because we couldn't afford a car. This is my mum's ritual every Sunday before I had to go to the masjid. Why do you always walk with your head down? Stand up straight, mum. Someone's gonna see me, yeah? Allow it. I have never seen anything like it. A girl who is so ashamed of her roots and her family. I ain't ashamed. Inshallah, Shahida. Inshallah, Allah Mia will curse you with a daughter. All right, mum. Then you will see how difficult it is raising her in a country like this. She was always chatting shit about something. I was following all the rules. I was learning Arabic like she wanted me to at the mosque. And I only ever took off my hijab when I was in the shower. And even then, she would look at me funny like it was supposed to be waterproof or something. I just wanted to get home that day. I left my mum at the front door and I legged it up the stairs. My phone was blinking. A WhatsApp message from Aaron asking me to come over. I laid out 3 long-sleeve bodycon dresses on the bed and 4 hours later I was ready. 7 o'clock. Before I had a chance to knock on the door, Aaron opened it and pulled me upstairs. I knew his mum was in because she was up singing along to Strictly. He closed his bedroom door and locked it. His room was foggy and smelt of weed and antiseptic. Aaron's back was covered in roots. Roots of the kapok tree. If you don't know, it's one of the only trees where the roots spread out and grow on the surface as well as underneath. So you can see all its imperfections in its growing process. And even though the roots want to travel in every direction, it's still proper grounded into the earth. And when he would take his top off, the whole tree began to move. And the roots would spread down his back. And the thorns which travelled around his waist led up to the stems on his arms, which were both covered in 4 sleeves of dark red roses. And just above his forearm was a woman's eyes filled with tears, along with a pocket watch on the other. I had never seen such a beautiful canvas. It was better than all of the wonders of the world, which I had only ever seen in my travel books. Aaron's a tattoo artist. He said school wasted his time, which is why he left. And he said truly creative people can't follow the education system anyway. He had this globe in his room. And he would land the tip of his finger on all the places that he had been to. And then tell me about all the different cultures he'd experienced while he was there. And how he'd always come back a better artist. I would love watching him just move around his room. The way he would touch things so delicately, like everything had a pulse. The way he would move over to his plant and pick the best buds for us to smoke. The way he would lick the edge of his Rizla and always give me the first pull. Getting high with Aaron was different. I mean, Tash would always have one pre-rolled when we got to hers, so we never really knew what was in it, and whatever it was, it just used to make us chat shit. But Aaron would talk about that deep shit, like vibrations and energies that we're surrounded by, and how important it was for us to just live in the moment. He would then stop halfway through his sentence and tell me how much he loved my eyes and my skin. He sat on the edge of his chair. And he put both his hands around my face and asked me if I noticed anything different. Look closer, Shahida, he said. And then I saw it. I had to look at it for about 10 seconds before I believed that my was only small, but underneath it was the Arabic translation.
I read somewhere that when the air temperature around you is above 99 degrees Fahrenheit, you need to sweat just to control your body temperature. And at that moment, Aaron's room got proper hot. Gossam said there was something so exciting about it, though. I kind of liked it. Everything about it. The font he used. Bold. Edgy. Which he said represented my spirit. And the Arabic translation just made the whole thing feel holy. Ritualized. You get me? And then he presented me with one of his moments. The moment which changed everything. He raised his eyebrows and said, "Will you come away with me?" I think I must have been frozen for at least 10 seconds before I said, "Are you dumb? Yes! Yes, I'll come!" And before I had a chance to think, I could smell the antiseptic again and I felt the tracing paper hit my lower back. And the feel of his rubber gloves as they gripped my hips and held me still, which made my heart race, but my body was static. And I could feel him wiping off the beads of sweat which had started to form on my back from where I was so nervous. After it was over, I lay on his chest, listening to his slow, steady heartbeat, which was so different to the speed of mine. And I could hear my sister's voice in my head telling me that it was haram to have a tattoo and that if I got it, I wouldn't be able to have a proper burial. But it was something that would always tie us together. So when Aaron would go travelling or not call me for days at a time, it didn't matter because he would always bring the world back with him. He would tell me about the 7 wonders of the world and how I would feel when I was stood in front of them. Whilst he drew around the outline of my tattoo with the tip of his finger, his name, which he wrote so well, and it made me feel connected to him in ways that henna couldn't. He took me down to Oxford for the day, and we stopped at a spot which overlooked one of the university buildings, the chapel of Keble College, which was like proper old and ancient. And he held me close and kissed my lips and slipped something into my pocket. And there it was. The concrete to his promise. The last brick to his pyramid. And the root of his word. A round the world ticket. And at that moment, Hounslow didn't exist. It was wiped off the planet and there was nothing left of it. He put his hands on my waist and he said, "Oye, woman, wrap close your cloak so you won't be bothered by ignorant folk. You can climb mountains and cross the seas, expand your mind in all degrees with the right to prosper and the right to grow, whether it be fast, steady or slow. The feelings you have now won't disappear overnight, but somehow, some way, everything will be all right." Miss Middleton taught us poetry for a whole year, but I never fell in love with it until that day. I went home and recited the poem to Aisha, but she just crossed her arms, leant back on the kitchen counter and said, "Wake up, Shahida." My mum was finding it hard to look at me. I'd covered all my tracks, but she sensed something was going on. Because Aaron said that everyone gives off energies. Maybe she could see mine. Maybe she could see the places that I was going reflecting off me, and maybe she couldn't stand it because she was stuck here. But as much as I felt ready to be stood in front of the 7 wonders, I still felt like some dickhead stood in front of her. What if she finds out and marries me off? What if I'm like shipped off to Pakistan secretly and they'll drop me to the airport and do some MI5 shit where they told me to put my phone in a scary brown envelope and then replace it with a Nokia 6210? And then they delete my Facebook, my Insta, my Snapchat.
change my passport and wipe me off the face of the planet and get me married off to some fat, lazy, 40-year-old man who lives in a remote village in Pakistan somewhere. And we won't have a TV. And if we did, I wouldn't be allowed to watch it anywhere because I'd be outside looking after his goat in the back garden, which is obviously named after some famous Pakistani cricketer because he thinks that's bear cool. And then Aisha's voice rang through me one more time. Wake up, Shahida. And I did. I woke up and realised that I had officially missed two of my core exams, maths and science, which meant I was going to fail anyway. And I had ignored my mum's calls all day and that I was supposed to go to Leonie's house and cover for her while she was out with Mr. Coleman. I fucked up. But there's no room for it in my future. I knew that there were loose ends that I had to tie up, but it was too late. Tash was already looking to mash me up and Leonie weren't going to stop her, so confronting them didn't quite go the way that I had planned. Last week I was on the 117 after leaving Aaron's, and both Tash and Leonie jumped on with Miss Dynamite's voice blaring from Tash's phone. They were sat on the two middle seats at the back of the bus with their brand new leopard print Air Maxes on and donuts in their hair that were the size of their heads. I heard them whispering from the back, "Do you think she's ever going to come back to school?" "Nah, cuz. She's too comfortable now, innit?" You see, what they didn't realise was that they were going to be here forever. They'll be catching this same bus in 10 years' time, signing on, going back and forth to the job centre on Lambton Road with their babies crying and screaming in the pushchair, stuck in Hounslow for good. I calmed myself down and sunk deep into my thoughts. I started thinking about Route 66. Me and Aaron parked on the edge of the Grand Canyon. Him holding me by the waist and gazing into my eyes and... Oi! I was less annoyed that Tash was shouting at me and more annoyed that she disturbed my thoughts of Aaron. I held my tongue and looked ahead. What? Did you not fucking hear me? I could feel the palms of my hands getting sweaty and the handles of the bag slowly disappearing into my clenched fists. My whole body felt like it was on fire and my hand tightened around the pole. I could hear Leonie's squeaky giggle while Tash was kissing her teeth and staring me out. And I could see Leonie getting awkward, so she turned towards the bus window and started drawing pictures of dicks and spliffs, anything that she hoped could get Tash's attention. But Tash opened her big mouth and turned everything upside down. "You're just a fucking Hounslow girl, Shaz. And you're one dumb bitch if you think you're getting out of here." I looked down at my Air Maxes and the night ticks were all fuzzy. Miss Dynamite's voice started getting louder and louder and the sound of the bus doors opening was piercing through me. I started breathing faster and heavier. And then I let go of the pole and I grabbed Leonie by the hair and I was screaming in her face like I was possessed. And I can't be sure, but I think I punched her like 4 times. And I was meant to go for Tash, but Leonie was in the way. And I thought Tash was going to rush me once I jumped Leonie. But then she just started crying. I must have looked like a proper psycho to make Tash cry. I mean, she was rushed by a group of boys once and didn't even cry then. I got off at the back doors and I could see Tash mouthing the word sketch from the bus window. I fixed my hijab and I just chalked it up to pure jealousy. Imagine, right? Some people will die without ever having had a chance to experience true love. Take my sister. She don't know what true love is. What, just because everyone in the community celebrated her marriage? It doesn't make her love any deeper or truer than mine. No one round here could ever understand how deep our love was. It was only ever something that could be felt and only between the two of us. Yeah, I know Tarek's taking my sister on a fancy honeymoon, but Aaron didn't have to marry me to open up the world to me. He said that if you love someone that much, you would do that for them regardless. Walking home from the bus stop, I could feel the streets of Hounslow turning into sand underneath my feet. The sound of the shutters closing and becoming the busy market stalls of the Far East. I felt like if I was to go home and touch my bedroom walls, they would crumble into dust because nothing mattered anymore. Nothing was real. And when nothing feels real, it becomes easier to lie. About a month ago, Aaron asked me to stay at his house for the first time in a whole year. He said it's going to be a special night, so I spent a good hour coming up with something to tell my mum. Mum, I know it's last minute, but I was wondering if I could stay over at Yasmin's house. This was the first time I had said anything to her in a month. She's not been the same with me since Oxford. She keeps holding her stomach when she sees me. Probably thinking about what the worst case scenario is. How she'll have to cope with the shame. Seven o'clock. Before I had a chance to knock on the door, Aaron opened it and pulled me inside. The smell of weed and antiseptic was stronger than ever. He sat crouched over his bed, using his folder full of sketches to roll up on. I inhaled his smoke and put my hand on his chest, covering up some of the letters of my name. He looked at me with that deep stare. And if I wasn't so in love with him, I would have told him, stop making moments out of everything. I could feel my heart beating faster, something I was used to by now. He kissed me on the lips and said, don't you think it's about time you showed me your hair? I told him it weren't even all that. And then he kissed me at the top of my head and told me that nothing in this world was worth being scared of, especially not him. But I told him that it wasn't just my hijab, it was part of my mystery and what separated me from the rest. Because you know, Uncle Abdelaziz, yeah? He said that women who wear the hijab are like pearls in a shell, protected. And without it, we would get washed up by the ocean, which is full of sharks, which want to hurt us, but I... But I knew Aaron wasn't that. He loved me. He looked at every part of my face and then slowly unpinned the pink and blue diamond hairpin which held everything together so beautifully. And then he said, she chose to hide behind her veil. In her safe home, her existence frail. Her identity and her honor, her own choice to preserve. Hiding within her soul the modesty she reserves. Proud of her identity. Happy in her choice. This is what she is. Her cloth, no longer her voice. And then my dark brown hair tumbled down to my shoulders. When I woke up, Aaron wasn't there. And for the first time, I'd seen his room in light. Not daylight or twilight or even sunlight. Nothing mystical or magical like that, but it was just this grey, concrete, gloomy colour which washed over the room. Hounslow light. His tattoo templates that covered his floor were gone. The ones I used to have to tiptoe or hop between to get to him, and the poetry which used to line the walls were gone. There was no order to anything. Nothing had a set place, and this wasn't how it was supposed to feel. I crept out of his house in the early hours of the morning. And Hounslow High Street felt a little bit like that scene from 28 Days Later. No one in sight, but I could feel my mum's presence as I walked home. You see, my mum, she already has a solid plan in her head of where we're supposed to end up. And without ever telling us, she expected us to figure it out. I mean, that ain't fair, is it? There was no room for mistakes. No time to step off her pre-planned path and do a gram of MDMA in a park somewhere or get caught shoplifting. I mean, that never stopped me before, but this was different. What's that word Mr. Coleman used to describe Mary Magdalene? Tarnished? Something sketty like that. Uncle Abdelaziz says that none of us are angels. But he said, as long as you catch yourself in moments of temptation and immediately turn back to Allah, then inshallah, he'll allow you back in his good books, innit? which sort of meant you could just do whatever you wanted and kind of get away with it. It was the day of the registry. The second part of this mind-numbing wedding. The paperwork. The bit your uncles and cousins can't be bothered to sit through, and why should they? No free parking, no free food, and no gossip. My mum was running around trying to find my sister's earrings, and I could hear her shouting at me from downstairs, telling me to get out of bed and help her look for them, but I was just staring deep into my phone and waiting for it to ring. My morning ritual, waiting for Aaron to tell me that he couldn't get any signal where he was, which is why he hadn't rung me in 6 weeks. Nijana, come downstairs. They're probably on top of the microwave, just waiting it. Nichao. Ek ladka darwaza pe hai. There's a boy at the door. Yes! I was relieved that he'd finally come to his senses and decided to stop ignoring me. Come to pick me up, maybe. Whisk me off earlier than planned. Whatever his reasons were for blanking me, I could never be angry with him. I just needed to see him. My mum was standing at the bottom of the stairs. She had her hands on her stomach again, preparing herself for what was about to happen. The moment she'd been waiting for these past few months, and then my stomach sunk when I got to the last step. She looked right through me and said, Shahida, inshallah, Allah Mia will forgive you. I couldn't take my eyes off her. They followed her to the doorway of the living room, and she looked back at me without saying a word and slammed the door. Those words rang through my head, and I tried to think of all the different ways I could seek forgiveness while still having what I wanted. I couldn't help but think Allah was testing me and he was presenting me with two doors. But I just wanted him to be straight with me and tell me whether I should put my mum out of her misery, open the living room door and tell her everything, or was this the part where I chose love? Yeah. I walked over to the front door, shaking with fear and excitement, and then... Oh! Oh, fuck, I'm bleeding! Is that blood? Oh, I think he broke my nose. Leonie's brother found out about what happened on the 117. My nose was full of blood, leaking all over the carpet, and before anyone had a chance to see, I left the house and I forgot my hijab. God, my mystery was at about a zero and I didn't even know where I was going, but my nose was fucked, probably broken, and I had to get it sorted before the registry, so I stumbled into Boots on Hounslow High Street for the pharmacist to have a look at. And I thought while I was there and unrecognisable, I'd deal with the other thing I'd been putting off, but I couldn't bring myself to put it on the counter. So instead I started picking up anything and everything I could find. Chewing gum, Tic Tacs, eyeliner, the leaflets, which didn't cost anything. Followed by the pregnancy test I had in my hand, covered in sweat. The pharmacist looked at me up and down and spoke louder than he needed to. Can I help you? Just what I needed. Some 6 foot glorified Indian pharmacist who didn't make it as a doctor, looking at me up and down with a look on his face that said, what a waste. I leant over the counter and said, I need a bandage for my nose. Which kind do you want? Which kind have you got? Well, there are different bandages for different reasons. This one, for example, is for temporary injuries and needs to be changed once a day. And this one is for more permanent damages, mainly used if the harm that's been caused is irreparable or needs major medical attention. I couldn't work out why this dickhead was shouting at me like I was on the other side of the shop. I'll take the second one, please. Of course you will. Can I help you with anything else? He kept looking at me with this long stare, probably thinking that if I was his daughter, he would wash his hands of me immediately. The mixture of the pain and the anger that was built up made me lose all sense of myself. Look, bruv, I've missed my period, all right? So just give me 3 more of the same tests so I could go home. Oh, and by the way, the Prophet, he don't allow contraception if it's done for vain or for selfish reasons, all right? I'll tell you this for nothing, but this idea that everyone has in their head that a Muslim bride is pure and innocent till her wedding night is pure gas. That her husband's going to take her to some fancy hotel on a beach and what they're going to experience each other's bodies for the first time is the biggest lie you will ever hear. My sister had loads of boyfriends before Tariq. White, black, Chinese, Indian, Middle Eastern, Italian, Caribbean, Bulgarian, Romanian, Lithuanian, French. Believe me when I tell you that Aisha has tasted every cuisine before her main course, so her mystery is fake. I just knew I had to get through this wedding, and then I'd be out of here. How long till I have to leave? Okay, I've not got long. So, there we were, at the registry, watching this boring shit. I spent most of the day in the toilet trying to cover up my broken nose with lumps of concealer, hoping no one would notice, and I just kept hearing echoes of my mum's voice throughout the day telling people that I fell down the stairs. Hounslow couldn't have felt closer, and it was suffocating me with everything that it had. I don't know whether it was because I was high on Tash's paracetamol, but the guests looked more and more cartoon-like as the day went on. Their teeth were bigger, their laughs were louder, and I tried to ring Leonie from the toilet cubicle, but it kept going through to voicemail. I wanted to tell her that I didn't mean what happened on the bus. While Aisha and Tariq's vows for each other were getting sanctified in the name of Islam, I kept opening my clutch bag and looking at my ticket, which was sat neatly next to my lip gloss. I needed to be certain about something. Anything. So, I ran my fingers over to the gate number, which I had memorised so well. Then across to the seat number, trying to work out who out of the two of us would be sat next to the window, but I couldn't because I didn't know where Aaron was sat. Whether we were sat together or whether he had just booked whatever seats were free. And as hard as I looked, I could only see my seat number. So I looked at the email confirmation on my phone, which he had sent me to see if there were any more clues on that. But there was nothing. Nothing that showed a booking for two people. One departure time. One seat number and one ticket. One ticket. I had this fucked up dream the night before that I got out the shower and my tattoo was gone and everything I touched crumbled, but it didn't turn into the sand that I had so often imagined, but just dust. Leonie ain't been the same since she come out that clinic. I can't explain it, but now it takes a little bit longer for her to get our jokes. And sometimes she would just be in her own world. I would usually give her a big hug or trip her up at anything to snap her out of that daze. We got home that night and Aisha kicked off her heels. Mum got comfortable in the living room and the house was finally still. I crept past Aisha's room towards the bathroom. And after lining up the fourth test on the glass shelf, everything started spinning. It was a clear win for the crosses. A positive verdict. And all I could hear was the sound of bangles hitting the sink as I tried to get my balance back and everything began to crumble. Until I was met by a sound which scared me more than anything. More than what I had just discovered. Mum crying. I wanted to go into that living room. And instead of hugging her and comforting her, I wanted to fucking shake her and say, Mum, do you know what I needed from you? Do you? I needed you to tell me about the day you fell in love and how you coped when you had your heart broken the first time you were caught sneaking out the house to meet a boy or your first kiss. Instead of always trying to distract us with these Arabic lessons and lectures, spending your whole life trying to make us learn a language and a religion which we can't ever truly understand while living in this city. Your version of what you thought could truly save us when really it was so much more simple than that. A touch, a hug, a brief conversation. I read somewhere that it only takes a few weeks before a baby can tell the difference between its mum and other adults. And the voice and smell of a mother can be recognised from birth. So that means you're pretty much fucked